Today's daf in Masechet Yomah, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Hei, and we are holding on daf Pei Dalet Amud Beis, almost at the bottom. And I just wanted, I said to you yesterday that we would review again the Inyanim of the Rov that Shmuel was talking about, because we had to run through it a little bit too quickly yesterday. So let's start again, perhaps. So Shmuel said, "Ein holchin bepikuach nefesh achar harov." Okay, so the question is, what case is he talking about? If the case is in name of the ikatisha Yisrael v'kuti echad bein ha'em, obviously, if we've got nine Jews to one kuti, so then we do have a rov. That can't be the case. If we're talking about palgo palgo, if we're talking about 50-50, so then we have a suffik nefashos. It's a suffik hashakul, suffik nefashot. Also, we would be Mechal Shabbos in order to be able to save the guy, that's for sure. So the case that Shmuel must be referring to is obviously a case where we've got nine Kutim and one Yisrael. You should save the life of the Yisrael. But what's the case? If the case is that they are in one particular place where they live, so they're not Nami Pshita, that's also obvious because the halacha is that when something is Kavua, it has a din of mechza al mechza, and therefore it really is not rov. There is no rov here. So therefore, we also have the din of kavua. Kol kavua mechza al mechza, mechza al mechza, Dami tells us that there is no rov in that case. So that can't be the case either. Therefore, the case must be lo tzricha. The only case that makes any sense is that they were poresh l'chotzer acheret. Now, there's a lot of different approaches to that. Rashi's approach is that the entire group moved over to a different chatzar, and therefore they are no longer in their kavua, in their fixed position in their own area. And at that point, a building collapses on one of them. So you would have thought, okay, so over there we should say that obviously, kol deparish miruba kaparish. So if we have one individual, then he must be non-Jewish, right? Kamash malan. Therefore, Shmuel is coming to tell me, delo alchu bepikuach nefesh achar harov. So that would be telling me, in this particular case, that we would not follow the rov. Now, that's Rashi's approach. As I told you, there's very many different approaches, particularly the Rambam's approach, is that we're not talking about that we actually moved out everybody into the other chatzar. Well, but because that would just simply be a new kviyut of a mokum. The Rambam learns that what it's talking about is that everybody was ne'ekar, meaning they could still be in their chatzar, and they have gotten ready to move. So it means that they're all about to walk out. One guy does walk out, and then the building collapses on the one guy that does walk out. We don't need to have this case at all that Rashi is talking about. So therefore, if the case is that one of them was ne'ekar, so then the halacha is that you would not, if you don't know who it is, you would not be able to be mifakeach alav v'sagal if you go baser the rov. But if the rov was Yisrael, so then you would be mifakeach alav v'tagal. Comes along Shmuel to say that we would not, in that case, go baser the rov. But the Gemara is about to show that that isn't really true. Eini, is it really so? Because Amar Ravasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tisha Kutim Yisrael Echad. So if you have nine Goyim, one Jew, and a building collapses on one of them in the Chatzar, so then you are Mefakeach. But in another Chatzar, it's not Mefakeach. So then that would mean that, according to Shmuel, he's going against the Halacha over here. And the Gemara answers, Lokasha. It's not really a problem, because the case of Shmuel is where the entire group left, and the case of Rabbi Yochanan is where only Porosh Miktzatayu, only was some of them left, and that was the case in the Rambam. Some of them left, and they had already been Ne'ekar, and therefore you go in that case, Basarov, because we have no reason to say that a Yisrael was ever present in this other chatzar. But the moment that you know for a fact that the Yisrael was present in this chatzar, So then, Eino Chinami, Shmuel was saying, you don't go Basar Rav. Ask the Gemara, Miyom Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel actually say that there's no Rav in the case of Pikuach Nefesh? What do we do with the Mishnah in Machshirin? V'atanan. Over here we have an interesting story. We find an abandoned baby, right? And we have no idea whether he's a Yisrael or he's a Goy. So then the halacha is like this. If most of the city are non-Jews, so then we assume that he's a Goy. If most of the city is Yisrael, then we assume he's a Yisrael. If it's half and half, so then we also treat him as a Yisrael. So now, what exactly are the three different stages? So Rav said, first of all, you have to know that when we said that we treat him as a Yisrael, that's only in terms of maintaining his life. So in other words, if he's starving or whatever, we'll take care of him. But in terms of being meyaches him, let's say it's a her and not a he, and we'll say, okay, so we could assume that she is Jewish, that would not be true in terms of marrying a Kohen. So to be meyaches the child, we would not say that because we're machmir when it comes to inyonim of yichus. Okay, that's a halacha bechlal that we were mekabel on ourselves that the kohanim are not going to be semech and inyonim of yichus just on the elements of rov. Okay, so far we haven't gotten to the question that we have. Here's the question. Shmuel says that apparently he's referring to the same case that Rav is referring to, and he's saying that when it says that if you have most of the people in town, we know that they're Jewish, that then we treat the child as a Yisrael, that's binogea being mefakeach alav atagal. That means that we'll be mechalal Shabbos. Well, I don't understand. I thought Shmuel said before that even if you don't have a rov, you mefakeach atagal, right? So he's contradicting himself. Answers the Gemara, Shmuel was not referring to the same case that Rav was. Shmuel was referring to the case of the Reisha. The Reisha said, if most of them are Kutim, then he's a Kuti. Comes along Shmuel to say, but that's not always true. Because Lefakeach Etagal ain't no king. Of that case, as I said before, we do not go according to a Rav if we're talking about the idea of saving his life on Shabbos. So over there, we will not go according to the Ruba, and therefore Shmuel is saying we need to understand that case in the Mishnah. Okay, so then it's completely consistent. All right, if this is true, can you explain to me what the Mishnah is saying then? If Rov or Kutim, for what? You're telling me to be Mechal Shabbos, I'll be Mechal Shabbos on him. Okay, so then L'mayilchata, in what sense is he a Kuti? Says Rav Papa, it means that, I mean, if Shmuel says you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, right? So then that would certainly mean that if the kid is starving, we'll give him something to eat, right? So it can't be in L'hachayoto either. So what does it mean? That's what Gemara is asking. In what sense is he a goy? When we give him something to eat, do we have to give him kosher food to eat? No, that's the question. So we'll give him the velas. So in other words, as far as saving his life is concerned, you're absolutely correct. We'll save his life even if it was Rov Kutim. But nonetheless, we will treat him as a non-Jew because we will feed him the velas. Same way we would have given to a goy. Okay, and then you'd say, if Rov Yisrael is Yisrael, I mean, what is that nogea? If Rov Yisrael is Yisrael, you said that this part of the Mishnah is certainly not talking about Mefakeach HaTagal, because even if Rov Kutim, we would be Mefakeach HaTagal. We would be treating him as a Yisrael in that sense. So what is it referring to, according to Shmuel? Because since the Mishnah says Mechza al Mechza is Yisrael, so then obviously if Rov Yisrael is Yisrael, so what is the difference between the cases over here? It's clearly that there's some difference that in a case where you have Rov, only then we will treat him as Rov. So what would that be? Now, it can't be to tell me that you don't give him the velas, because we said we don't give him the velas even if it's mechza al mechza. It was only if it was rov kutim we give him the velas. So then what does it mean? Answers the Gemara, it's referring to giving him back something that he lost. So the halacha is that the chi of Hashavas Haveda does not apply to a goy. And therefore, what the Mishnah is telling me, that if most of the city are Yisro, so then you have to be machmir and give him back his metzia. I found his wallet. It's got his name in it. I have to give it back to him. If, on the other hand, it was only mechza mechza, so then we would tell him, look, prove to me that you're Jewish and I'll give it back to you, right? So therefore, it's coming to tell me that we would have to give it back to him. Okay, so then mechza al mechza. So when it says that if it's half and half, what is it referring to then now? It can't be to tell me that it's usur to give him nevelas, because we already said that only if it's rov kutim are we able to give him nevelas. So then obviously if it's not rov, meaning it's only mechza mechza, we can't. So what's this additional point that is Yisrael? Omer Reish Lakish, that refers to the dinim of nezikin. So what is the pshat by nezikin? The halacha is that if a shor shel Yisrael damages the shor shel akum, so then he's potter. And Masha Enkein, if the shor of an akum damages the shor shel Yisrael, so then even if he's a tam, he has to be nezik sholem. So you're telling me that we will define him as a Yisrael if it's mechzal mechzal. In terms of nezikin, tell me what the case is, because that doesn't make much sense. If you're telling me that our, let's say, a Yisrael's shor was nogeach his shor, and now we're telling him that he's a Yisrael, and then we'll pay him. Why? Hamotzi michaveiro olav araya. We will tell him, bring me a raya that you are Yisrael, and then I will pay you. But why would we pay him on the basis of mechza mechza? That's a suffix. So that doesn't make sense that he would be considered to be a Yisrael. Mitzad a suffix to be motzi moman, lo tzricha. The Nakhe Torah, the Dele Torah Didan, it's talking about that his shor attacked a shor of Yisrael. So therefore, he's considered to be Yisrael in the sense that he's only going to pay Chatzi Nezek. Because the other Chatzi Nezek, he can say, excuse me, you prove to me that I'm not a Yisrael, and then I'll give you the other half. But since you have no basis to be Motzi Momon from me, because I'm a Suffolk Yisrael, so because of that, it says, for all intents and purposes, mechza mechza, he will only pay the way a Yisrael pays, which is certainly true. Okay, let's continue the case of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said a building collapses on someone, and then it starts going through a whole list of different things. We're not sure if he's there. He may not even be there. We're not sure if he is there, whether he's dead or alive. And if he's alive, we have no idea whether he's Jewish or not. Maybe he's a Kuti and so on. Then in all of these cases, we're going to nonetheless go ahead, bring in bulldozers, we'll clear it up, and we'll get him out of there. So what is the point of adding all of these cases exactly? How do we read the Mishnah? Are they separate cases of Suffolk? No. Lomi Boikoma. The Mishnah is giving us one Suffolk built on another. In other words, not only in a case where it's a suffix if the guy is there, where in that case we may be referring to, but if he were there, we would know he's alive. Take, for instance, a case where a guy might be inside of a cave and there was a collapse on the front of the cave, which prevents oxygen from getting in, right? So over there, there's no reason for us to say that he's dead. He's just stuck in the cave. So that's the first case. If he's there, then he's certainly alive. Okay, so over there, we would certainly go ahead and clear away the collapse. But even if there's a suffix that he may be dead, meaning that a building collapsed on him, even there, I'm going to go ahead and be mefakeach the gal, even though he may not even be present there. And not only that, but even if I'm not sure whether he's there or not, and if he is there, whether he's alive or not, and even if he is alive, I'm not even sure if he's Jewish. So lo mi boi suffolk chai suffolk meis, where we know that he's a Yisrael. But even if the additional suffolk is that is a Sofek Guti, Sofek Yisrael, even in that case of multiple levels of Sveikas, we will still be Mifakeach HaSagal, and this will see that we go based on the Pasuk of Achai Bahem, that you have to see to it that in no possible way would there be a chance that we would be giving up on a Nefesh of Yisrael. Okay, now, this coming Gemara is extremely nogea halacha lamaisa, and it comes up every single day in hospitals, of course, and here's the issue. You find the guy to be alive, you continue to clear away the stones. Well, obvious. Mitzahu chai, I mean, why would we not continue to do whatever we need to do to save him? No. We're talking about that this guy is in critical condition. He has only hours to live. We know that we're never able to be able to give this guy a chance at real survival, but we may be able to maintain his life for another hour or two if we can get him to the hospital. So that's what it's coming to tell me, that even in such a case, afilu l'chayesha, huh? That even though we know he's going to be dead in a couple of hours, we still will continue being b'mechal Shabbos in order to preserve his life as much as we can. That's the big chiddush of the Mishnah. Now, the next piece that says if he's dead, you leave him there is pretty obvious, isn't it? Hanami pshita. No, it's coming to tell me a chiddush. The chiddush is, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, and remember that we had the whole sugya back in Masechet Shabbat, that in a case where there's a fire on Shabbos, and there is someone who is dead in the building, can we save the dead body from the fire? The issue over there would be just a question of muktzah. So do we move muktzah on Shabbos? So Omer Rav Yehuda ben Lakish, I heard, Shematzilina tamet mipnei adleika, that you do save the body from a fire. So I might have thought that the same way that Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish says that you could save a mace from a fire, you can also remove it from a building that collapsed on it. Therefore, comes along the Mishnah to say that in the case of a collapse, we will not move the mace on Shabbos, even though we're only talking about a problem of muktzah. We're not talking about chilul Shabbos. Why is that? That's because Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish only was matir, moving the mace away from a fire. That's because of the psychological power of Adam Bohul HaMeto. A person who sees a relative's body, which is about to be burnt up, he is not going to restrain himself, and he's going to possibly put out the fire. And if you don't allow him to save the body from the fire, then he may come to be mechabeh. And therefore, we were matir. But here, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? You're telling him, no, you can't move the body out. So he'll move the body out if he doesn't want to listen to you. But he certainly can't do worse in terms of being mechal Shabbos, right? So ma'it le'lameva, there's nothing else for him to do. He's not going to come to be over on an Issa D'Oraita. And what Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish was saying was only that we're going to be matir, the Issa D'Rabbanan of Tiltol, in order to avoid coming to an Issa D'Oraita. That's all that we said. So therefore, in this case, even Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish would be moida. By the way, there's a bit of a problem over here, and that is, what would be so bad if he would put out the fire? Because if we paskin, like Rabbi Shimon, that a malacha sheina tzricha legufa is considered to be only an issur d'rabbanan, so he won't come to an issur d'oraisa there either. So is this going only according to the shita like the Rambam, where we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? That a malacha sheina tzricha legufa, because putting out a fire to save a body is not a tzricha legufa. The only tzricha legufa that we have is where you put out the fire in order to create pecham. So there you need to put out the fire as part of the making of the charcoal. So basically, the halacha in this particular area is that since it is so easy to come to an actual chilul Shabbos, which would be a putting something out that was not a malacha shein tzricha legufa, it's very difficult for people to know the difference between when you're chayav on kivui and when you're not chayav on kivui. So it could be that Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish would be true according to all of the shitas. And the Mishnah Berurah brings this, that when it comes to kivui, particularly over there, we're makbid as if it's a deraisa. Okay. Anyway, now, this is the big question, which is one of the most burning questions in contemporary medicine, and it's one of the most bitter controversies that is still going on, and that is, the Brisa says like this: we're trying to uncover a body in a building. We don't know whether the guy is alive or dead. So it says, if you find him dead, then you don't continue to uncover the body from the rubble, right? What does that mean if you find him dead? Now, obviously, this is the big issue. What defines finding a guy dead? So, Tana Rabbana, ad heichan hu bodek. So, where would you check to see whether he's alive or dead? When we're saying that if you find him dead, how much of him did you find? So, ad heichan hu bodek. So, it says, Tana Kama says over here, ad chotmo. You check him until you see whether he's breathing. So in other words, you check to see whether there's any sign of movement of air around his nose. And if he's not breathing, then it's okay, and you leave him there, and you're not allowed to be mefakeh hatagal, and you do not say that he is a suffix, that maybe he's alive. V'yesh omrim. But others say that you have to check his heartbeat. So yesh omrim ad libo, you'd have to get to his heart, and only then you can allow the assumption that he's dead. How about in a case where a number of different stories collapse, you find that the people that were on the top of the building, that they are dead. So can I continue, or must I continue going on and uncovering the entire building, because maybe people that were even lower down, underneath much more rubble, maybe they're alive? Yes. You cannot assume that because the upper people are dead, that the lower people are dead. Lo yomar kvar metu atachtonim. There's no way to come to conclusion from some of the levels on the rubble and others. It's always possible that people were saved by being under that triangle and so on. And there was actually a maysa where Matsu El Yoni Metim, a whole building collapsed. They found all the people on top were dead, and the only ones that they found were alive were the people on the very bottom of the entire rubble. So clearly that is possible. Now, this question, of course, is very problematic. To say that we're going to see if a guy is breathing or not, that is going to define whether he's dead or alive, on the surface, it doesn't seem to make sense. And basically, I mean, there's many tshuvas. You know, particularly, we know the Chacham Tzvi wrote on this, and there's the Chacham Sefer. There's a lot of important tshuvas that are considered to be classical tshuvas on this issue. That the halacha, what they say is that it's only where the guy is not breathing that you also determine that there was no pulse by examining his neck. So there was no pulse in any of the places where you could check for a pulse on his temples, on his neck, and therefore the lack of breathing would be not in and of itself sufficient indication that he's dead, but only where we also can't detect a pulse. And then the question would be, what would it be in the other direction? We'll see in a moment that the Gemara is going to say there's a nafkamina. In which direction are you uncovering him? Would you be able to say that he's dead because you cannot detect a heartbeat? We'll talk about all of this in a moment. Let's first take a look at the cases in the Gemara. First, we have an aside. And the aside is the machlokas of the Tana Kama and the Yesh Omrim dependent in the famous machlokas of this brayta, the Tanya, Mehechan Avlad Notzar. Where is a fetus? How does fetal development go? So there we have a machlokas. There the Tana Kama says from his head, because it says Mimei Imi Atagozi. So you pulled me from my mother's womb. And the word gozi is a reference to a head, because it says, gozi nizrech v'ashlichi. And nizrech is a reference to rosh nizro, where his hair grows, right? So I see I'm not getting any waves anymore here, huh? Baruch Avram. Okay. We don't want them to skip out of Daf Yomi, you know? Very good. Okay. So that would imply that if fetal development starts from a head, so then the impact of a head, that is to say, I'm seeing that there's breathing going on, that's Miroshi. By the way, there's another beautiful way to understand this, which we'll see as Nogea later on. And that is that breathing is controlled by the brainstem. Heartbeat is not controlled by the brainstem. And the heart is completely autonomous. So therefore, if you're telling me that fetal development is a function of brain development, that the brain has to develop first, so then that would mean, perhaps, the Gemara suggests, that when it comes to the determination of death, that we would actually be able to determine death by whether there's breathing, because that's the brain. Okay. Now, the other shita is Abashol. Abashol says a fetus actually forms from tiburo, from its navel, and then it continues to develop in all directions, which would mean that the heart, as an autonomous functioner, would be necessary, and that would mean that the Tanakama holds you have to check breathing, and Abishol says you check his heartbeat. That's the partial level. Answers the Gemara, not necessarily. It could be that even Abishol would agree that in this case we would check for signs of life through breathing, because lo atkan lo kamar Abishol hatamel ninyetzira. There is no raya from the fact that Abishol says that when it comes to formation of fetal development, that the fetal development basically is talking about a parasite on the mother, and therefore what you're looking at is not the necessity for dealing with the independent life of the fetus. You're talking about the question of formation. Formation is basically controlled mathematically with various fractal geometry, and therefore something is formed most effectively from the middle and then expands outward. And it wouldn't necessarily imply that that is more necessary for life maintenance. It's simply that that is the easiest way for cells to continue growing out. It would be in the same way that a crystal would form from the middle of a crystal. So it's the same idea over here. Mashenken, when you're talking about pikuach nefesh over there, you're talking about the maintenance of life. Fine. I mean, Abishol certainly may be made that the ikar chiyute is indeed the function of independent breathing. Dichtiv kol asher nishmat ruach chayim be'apav. So only something that is basically breathing. Maybe we're made to that. Now, here's the issue. Rav Papa says, this machlokas, about whether you need to check for a heartbeat or whether you simply check for breathing, that's talking about you are uncovering the rubble from the person's feet going up towards his head. So over there we have a machlokas, whether you have to continue checking for breathing after you check the heart. But if you're talking about clearing away these stones from his head going downwards, and you've seen that he's not breathing, given the barakle at chotmo shuv eno tzarich, there's no point in checking any further. Dichtiv kol asher nishmat ruach chayim be'apav, and that is all that we need to check. Now, it's obvious what the problem is over here, right? So these are the questions that are raised over here by various shuvas. We have the Chacham Tzvi, we have the Chacham Sefer. They all assume that a heartbeat is obviously necessary for us to determine that there's no heartbeat, and that therefore what we're talking about over here is that you determine that there's no heartbeat by checking the pulse in the area that you're able to reach on the head, temples, the neck, and so on and so forth. Now, the obvious problem with that is that then the Gemara is leaving out the main point. I mean, the Gemara insists that we're only looking at breathing. I mean, why don't you tell me the main issue? The main issue is after you've checked for a heartbeat, then you look at the breathing. I mean, it's so against the pashtus of the Gemara that it seems almost outrageous to say that that's what we're talking about. So the more likely approach is that this halacha is not a question of defining the moment of death at all. We're talking about uncovering a body from under rubble. And therefore, it has nothing to do with someone who has, let's say, suffered a heart attack and is not breathing, or suffered a stroke and is not breathing. Because in that case, the not breathing doesn't prove anything about death. If we can restore oxygen, then the person will not die just because he's not breathing. So the idea over here is if you find a body that's been under rubble for a few hours and he's not breathing, the fact that the Gemara says you don't need to check for a heartbeat makes a heck of a lot of sense. The guy hasn't been breathing for hours. He's not going to be in a position where you have to also check his heartbeat. Then the question is, okay, the other way up, if there is no heartbeat, that may be that it's difficult for you to detect a heartbeat. Fine. So then you have to take a piece of glass and see whether there's any kind of deposit of moisture on the glass at all, even though you don't detect breathing immediately. That makes sense. That makes an awful lot of sense. However, that for some reason is not what these poskim say, in which case they're talking about needing to always define a heartbeat. But again, that's talking about where you are in a position to be able to restore oxygen. Now, let's understand that there's also other mekoros that we have, because remember we had an Eolais that if you have someone whose head has been cut off, he's metame ba'ohel, even though his heart is still beating. So there is certainly such a thing, and the Gemara in Chulin talks about the Gabi Dinim of Behema. There's concepts of nevela mechayim, that you could have a living body which is nonetheless dead in terms of the halacha. I mean, you often have chickens running around without a head, so to speak. And that cliche is based on reality. They're chickens. I've seen them. There's chickens that run around without a head quite some time. There's also the Lazarus reflex. There's people who are dead who will suddenly pop up and, it scares the heck out of everybody because they suddenly pop up and they sit up. Right? So it's called the Lazarus reflex, okay? So, I mean, there are obviously such things. So the Gemara says, well, what about the fact that the person is still moving and so on? If you cut off his head, says the Gemara, that is only considered to be muscular reflexes, like a zanava alita'a. So it's like cutting off a lizard's tail. Lizard's tail does a very nice job of moving around. It's obviously not going to be called something that is a living organism. It's imitating a living organism. So from this comes the profound controversy of whether, when the Gemara actually said, and this is the way I'm defining the controversy, and I'm giving it more sophistication than the way in which it began. So the controversy is like this. Is the control of breathing by the brain, that is the meaning of cutting off a head? So in other words, if you've cut off a head, then we're talking about, by definition, there is no nishmat ruach hayim ba'apav. And it makes no difference what is going on with muscles in the body. Because let's remember, the heart is nothing but a muscle. There's no magic about a heart. The Gemara does not believe that somehow or other, because a heart is beating, that therefore there is a neshama deep down in that heart. A heart's a muscle. So the question of whether that muscle continues to beat when it's not attached in any way to an organism that is going to be able to oxygenate it, obviously the muscle's going to die without oxygen. So it's not really important. If there's no longer an organism that can survive, pumping hearts are no different than moving arms or back muscles that pop up and appear to show that the person is alive. So now the question is, suppose we know that the head is still perfectly attached to his body, but the brainstem, which controls breathing, is completely dead. So suppose we can define that. So then, by definition, you have found, according to that, what the Gemara would be considered to be, there's no nishmat ruach chayim ba'apo. Because, the same way that the Mishnah in Oyoloi said, that if he doesn't have a head, I don't care what's going on with the rest of him, why don't you care? Here you've got a living body. Why don't you attach it to a oxygenating machine and keep him going without a head forever? And therefore, it will be, you know, a chiyuv d'oraisa to save his life by making sure that his headless body is supported. Nobody says such a crazy thing. So I understand the reason they're halachically allowed not to say such a crazy thing is because the Gemara says beferish. The Mishnah says beferish. He's considered to be dead. So let's use our brains. And suppose his head is still attached to the body, and we see that his brain has turned into complete liquid. There's no brain left, right? There is such a state, lysis it's called. So there is such a stage. So if we see that he's got no brain in his head, is he considered to have a head on his body or not? So over there, all of the poskim are ready to admit that if we could determine that, in fact, he has no brain, he has no head. So in other words, we understand that the Mishnah in Oyalos and all those Gemaras in Chulin are not literally referring to decapitating him. It means debraining him is the main point. So this became the issue. Is the ability to ascertain, if we can fully ascertain that there is no brain stem activity, forget about the rest of his brain. I understand he's a flatliner. Flatliners doesn't mean anything. You can have flatliners that can live for a long, long time, breathing on their own. Why? Aren't they brain dead? No, because they're not brain stem dead. And it's the very most primitive parts of the brain that control breathing, obviously. So the point over there would be to say that somebody is brain dead and he's flatlined on an electrocephalogram, that is crazy. That has nothing to do with death. And there's many cases where those kind of things, people can recover. Right, so we've got these different things we call locked-in syndrome, where the person's actually conscious. We've got these permanent vegetative states, where the person does not respond to anything, but nonetheless can continue to live for a long time. So the question is, if you artificially maintain respiration, the heart will continue to pump. Why not? It doesn't need a brain. It's completely autonomous. So if you continue to provide respiration to a body without a head, the heart will also pump. So we're going to say that he's alive because he has a heartbeat, because we've hooked him up to a ventilator, if he has no brain, and we're not allowed to turn off the ventilator and kill his heart? Nobody says that. The problem is that there will never be a case like that where, in practical terms, where he literally has no brain, that is a no-brainer. Okay, we don't have such cases. Fine, because long before that, lots of other things will have happened that will stop that heart from beating. The problem is that where we have a sudden situation where we've been able to maintain respiration, and meanwhile, the brain has been affected by a stroke or whatever, and the person shows absolutely zero response on a brain stem level. Brain stem level controls things that are very, very deep, including breathing, and there's a lot of tests. There's different tests, and if you go through all those tests, and there's no response at all, there's no changes in response to light, there's absolutely no reflexes, there's no breathing, spontaneous breathing, and so on and so forth. Plus, they even add putting in these radioactive substances and seeing whether it's being picked up by the brainstem and so on. So the brainstem is gone. So then the argument is that that is the equivalent of cutting off his head. So this has become the major machlokas. So Reb Elyashiv and Reb Shloime Zalman and the Reb Vosner, all of the modern teshuvas that is recognized in the Olam HaTorah, hold that we have no right to rely on those tests for brainstem death. Not that they're arguing necessarily that brainstem death would not be an indication, because Reb Shloime Zalman speaks out in an article that he wrote, he speaks out that if theoretically you could really be 100% certain, so then ain't no chinami. We would say that that would be the equivalent of cutting off his head. But We don't have that type of bedikah, and that type of bedikah has to be done without injecting anything, he adds, because otherwise you're doing an isser because you're not allowed to manipulate or do anything to the body of a goses, and this will cause the person possibly to be more karov to death. So it's not a practical kind of thing. On the other hand, you have Rabbi Tendler, who is the son-in-law of Rav Meisha, who claims that Rav Meisha, even though it is not clear from the tshuvas of Rav Meisha, he claims that Rav Meisha agreed to brain death as defined and as by the states has been accepted all over by law as the definition of death. But there's a good reason for this, because if you don't accept brain death as death, then you can't get organs, you can't harvest. Many organs will not be usable unless you take them out while you've got real oxygenation and the heart is still pumping. So you have to accept brain death or you're going to be in major trouble. So there's a lot of reasons for why things have changed that are practical reasons, not to mention the fact that if you don't accept brain death, you're going to have people that the hospitals need to maintain very expensively for who knows how long. So that is the issue. The time between brain death and the cessation of a heartbeat, that can be a long time, generally between 2 and 10 days, but it can go on for months. That's very expensive. So because of that, the law accepts in the United States all over brain death as a description of death. But every hospital's got its own set of criteria about how to define brainstem death. So that's already a problem. So that's these are practical problems. But Rabbi Tendler says that Rabbi Moshe agreed that brain death is death, and that all the other tshuvas where it's mashma, he does not, are referring to people in the persistent vegetative state and things like that, which are not the equivalent of brain death. And all he's saying is that the lack of any response from the patient does not mean that he's dead. Fine, which is obviously true. The Rabbanut HaRashit in Israel has also accepted brain death as a criterion. So again, this is in a modern society where you've got all of these issues that have to do with dealing with the entire tzibur and the way that hospitals work, it's pretty much impossible to get along without accepting that. Now, the shaila is, on a personal level, whether, you'd have to be cheshish, of course, for these other tshuvas that say that even though there's no independent breathing, that as long as a heart is beating, that you have, therefore, a live body. As you can see from the nature of the Gemara over here, we definitely seem to be ready to buy into Kol Asher Nishmat Ruach Chaim B'Apav. And the sense that we have, it would be possible perhaps to bring them back to life and so on and so forth. I don't know. I don't know that it says that. In other words, what you're asserting is that the possibility of bringing someone back to life is b'chayev you to maintain a semi-state of life, and you have no right to stop it. Remember, there's plenty of other Gemaras that say that you have no right to maintain life when a person is trying to die. So let him die peacefully. So let's say if there's a noise that's forcing him to concentrate and so on, and he's unable to simply relax and fade away, you're supposed to stop the noise. You're supposed to make it possible for a person to die as naturally as possible. So all of these super measures that are taken, it is not all that clear that this is the way that the Torah wants us to act. It's because of all of this fakus that we have over here of not being able to define halacha properly that we end up with these awful situations in which people are forced to live or semi-live, and it certainly does not seem to be exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would want. We don't know what to do la halacha. Okay, and what? Lo, in lanu zman achshav, aval afshar achar kach lichto. Okay, that's it. Ukvar ayah Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were walking along a road, and there was Levi HaSadar. Levi HaSadar appears to be someone who, although there's other girsos, and maybe it was Levi HaSarad, but Levi HaSadar shows up in places as somebody who was misader different halachas. and he was walking with Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah behind the Gedolei Hador, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah. And there was a shayla that came up, Nishala Shayla Zo Befnehem. How do we know, Bichlal, that Pikuach Nefesh is Dochash HaShabbos? What is the basis? Everybody takes for granted. So, Na'ana Rabbi Yishmael V'Yomar. Look, it's a Kal V'Chomer. It says in the Torah, Im B'machateret Yimatzeh HaGanav. So the halacha is that if somebody is breaking into your home and you don't know that that person is coming necessarily to kill you, or you could even leave the house and then there would be no problem, the din is you kill him. And you're not sure. Mazeh. She'safek amamon ba, safek anefashot ba. It's not 100% clear that he's going to come and he's ready to kill you. And shvichas damim is a horrible avera. It's metame yisaretz. It's gerim l'shchina shetistalek miyisrael. And in that sense, it's worse than chilul Shabbos. And nonetheless, on that suffix, you kill somebody to be able to save your life, which would otherwise anyway you'd be able to save by simply leaving the house. Kal v'chomer l'pikuach nefesh shedochet haShabbos. So what's the question? Obviously, if there's a chashash that you'll die, so then you're mechalel Shabbos for sure. Nana Rabbi Akiva v'yamar. It says, Ki yazid ish areyo me'imik mizbechi tikachenu lamut. So the halacha over there is that we've got a kohen that is considered to be, maybe, is it suffering, he's a murderer. So he's lahargoba or ma me'imiz bechita kachenu lamut. Take him off of the mizbeach and let him die. But it says next to the mizbeach, not on the mizbeach. So that would mean that if he's already begun doing a avedas hakorban, you do not take him to die. Now, let me just explain where Rabbi Akiva is going over here, says Rabbi Bar Bachana. This is loshanu ela lahamit. The whole discussion is tikachenu lamut. This is Rabbi Akiva's drasha. Lamut means where he would be killed. But suppose we would have to take a kohen off of Mizbeach in the middle of Aveda in order to save someone's life by having him testify on the behalf of somebody in Bezdin who is about to be killed, and he should run over and say, wait, I know additional testimony which can save this guy's life. Then afilu me'al mizbechi. That's what Rabbi Akiva is basing it on. Now here's his Kal V'Chomer. Okay, so getting back to Rabbi Akiva. Umaz esh savak yesh mamash bedvarav, savak ein mamash bedvarav. If this guy, well, who knows? He'll come to Bezdin. Bezdin will say, this you thought was going to change anything. This doesn't change anything. Maybe it does. I don't know. And we know that Aveda is so chomor that Aveda is doich HaShabbos. Normally we do the Aveda in the Beis HaMikdash. So, of course, Pikuach Nefesh, for sure will be doich HaShabbos. Rabbi Elazar said, I'll tell you something else. The Torah says to be Mechal Shabbos in order to do a Bris Milah. What's the big deal about Bris Milah? A Bris Milah is one out of 248 different organs in a person. The Torah says, so important that we fix up this Milah. Wait till after Shabbos. So if Milah, which is only one out of 248 different Devorim in an individual, and nonetheless, just to make sure that everything is nice and pretty, Dochet HaShabbat, that is a question exactly what is meant by Echad Me'evorav, because the fact is we will not be Dercha Shabbos for Echad Me'evorav. So if a person's got a chashash on a finger, we won't be Mechal Shabbos for it. So how do we learn this? And Rashi brings, he quotes the Tosefta without explaining it, that the Mila is going to be Mechayivim Koris, and then the Tosefta Tzmashma that will fix the Mila because it would eventually lead him to a Chiyav Koris. Okay, whatever it is, there's many different approaches to what this funny Kal V'Chomer is about. But the partial meaning is that the Torah on some level is Machshiv, even a small part of a human being's body, that it should be in proper condition, even if that involves Chilul Shabbos. So Kol Shekein, the organism as a whole, has to be saved on Shabbos. That's the simple meaning of the Kal V'Chomer. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudai, Mera, it says in the Pasuk, Et Shabtotai Tishmoru. What is Shabtotai? Ach Et Shabtotai Tishmoru. So you might think, keep my Shabbatot under any and all circumstances. No, it says, Ach Et Shabtotai Tishmoru. So ach always means sometimes. So chilek, maybe yes, maybe no. So meaning only keep my Shabbatot if it's not going to involve the loss of a life. Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef says, it actually, you can learn it out from the mitzvah of Shabbos. It says, Ki kodesh hi lachem. Shabbos is kodesh for you. For you means that it's yours. Ushmartem et haShabbat ki kodesh hi lachem. That means Shabbat was given to you. You weren't given to Shabbat. So if Shabbat was given to you, then that means that obviously you're mechal on Shabbat in order to save your life. You're not, lo atem misurim biyada. What are you going to say? The Shabbat has commanded that I should die? There's no such thing. Reb Shimon ben Menasseh Omer, it says, v'shamru b'nei Yisrael et haShabbat. And then it specifies that it should be a Shmira Shabbat, what? L'dorotam b'rit olam. So then that means that the important mitzvah of Shabbos is not this Shabbos. It's the whole idea of Shabbos. So therefore, obviously, Amrat Torah, chalel alav Shabbat achat. Forget about this Shabbos. In order that the person should live and have an opportunity to be Shomer Shabbat in general, we're not looking at a particular Shabbat. There's lots of Shabbatot. Dorotechem. Amr Reb Yudah Amr Shmuel. Shmuel said, well, these are all people from a previous generation, and they're much smarter than me, but I can tell you something. If I would have been there, I would have said a much better pshat than all these silly pshatim. I would have simply said, it says in the pasuk, v'chai b'hem. Okay? So v'chai b'hem means that the mitzvahs were given to you to live with, not to die for. So I understand what everybody's going nutty over here looking for these bekoras. Omar Rava, the truth is that l'kulu it l'pircha bar min yishmul d'letai pircha. I can show you that every one of these explanations is wrong. The only one that you can't show is wrong is Shmuel's. Shmuel stands no matter what. Because I can explain, look, Rabbi Shmuel said that the guy is coming into your house, you don't even know if he's coming to kill you. Who said you don't even know if he's coming to kill you? Maybe you do know, like Rava explained, because Rava says it's a chazaka, my time at a machteret. It's a chazaka that this guy knows, who's breaking into your home, that if this person discovers you in his house, making off with his things, he's going to try to stop you. And therefore, if you're going into that house, you know that you're going to be likely confronted, and you said to yourself, look, what can you do? If he's going to confront me, I'm going to have to kill him. Okay, so then that means he is coming to kill you. So then that means that it's a vadai. But how would we know that a suffik nefashis, okay? We've said even a suffik nefashis is a Shabbos. You only brought me a raya on a vadai nefashis. No good raya. Rabbi Akiva's raya also is no good raya. Because Rabbi Akiva says, well, you know, we don't know that this Kohen who's doing the Avodah has got anything intelligent to say. Maybe he'll walk at the Bezin and laugh him out of the house. Maybe not. Maybe like Abaya, because Abaya says in a case where a guy himself who's being taken out to the Beit HaSkila, and he says, wait, I just thought of something that may be a good taina in Bezdin. We bring him back to Bezdin. And we can bring him back to Bezdin time after time, every time he says he's got something intelligent to say. So Abaya says, we ask over there, I mean, what do you mean? How do we know that he's got something intelligent to say? So Abaya says, because we always send along with the entourage that's going out to the execution, we send along Talmidei Chachamim who can think about what he has to say and say, that's an intelligent point, let's bring it back to Bezdin and turn around. So maybe that's what it's talking about over here, that we had a Zuga de Rabbanon who examined what the Kohen has to say, and they say, let him come immediately to Bezdin, because he should stop doing that Voida. This is intelligent stuff. So then it's not a suffix. So again, Ashkechan Vadai, what makes you say suffix? And the truth is, every other case that we brought, all of these riots, I can show you each one of them, you can ask that that's only a Vadai. It's only a Vadai Mila that's Docha Shabbos, right? Achet Shabtotai could mean only where it's a Vadai Cheshash and so on. But how do you know? Same thing might be true about Bimachal Shabbos in order that he keep other Shabbatot. Maybe that's only where we're definitely going to save his life. So, Kulu, all these cases, you will not be able to show me our Sugya. Our Sugya says even a Suffolk. How would we know a Suffolk? But Shmuel, Shmuel, there's nothing you can ask on, because v'chai b'hem would mean under any and all circumstances, make absolutely certain that this guy is going to survive. Om Ravina v'temer of Nachum bar Yitzchak, you know, that's how the saying goes. Tavacha kachada papalta charifta, mimolit son of the kari. And one really sharp pepper, a nice pupil, one sharp pepper is better than a whole basket of squash. So Mimela, we can squash all the other approaches, and they're pretty dull tasting. But Shmuel, even though he is much later, he's got the sharp pepper.